Greetings and welcome to On the Brink Radio, broadcast number 342. This is Jeff Phillips Wefferson coming at you here from Dripstone Beach in Casuarina in Darwin. It's the first time I've recorded a show at the beach in about a month. That's not really true. Anyway, I'm on the bicycle again today for the first time. Instead of driving around in Landy, as I've been privileged to do. And I'm back at my little picnic table, and I can look out and see the ocean, and I can hear the ocean. And I can hear a beautiful little bird that the Maori in New Zealand call Kotari. He's a little similar or identical to the sacred kingfisher here, but his little song goes, and I heard one at the Botanical Garden the other day. It's Friday the 13th of November. And so to me, Friday the 13th have always been days of good luck. And this is also happening during the notorious Mercurial retrograde period. And I always tell people, well, look, it's not really going backwards. It just appears that way from the relative motion of the Earth and Mercury. So, but for me, Mercury retrograde and Friday the 13th are always exceptionally good days. And this day's been very, very good. And it's very good right now. And I'd like to send some of all that goodness to you. This show, following up on my show about telepathic communication, and then last week's show on what indigenous means in the world of today. Very interesting topics and not unrelated. This show is about, it's called On Being a Freelance Intelligence Agent. Now, you might go, well, so what do you mean by that? Well, an intelligence agent you think of as like a spy, like James Bond or, you know, the Man from U.N.C.L.E. or something like that. And it's kind of, they're kind of related with, they're either working for or related with sort of like international law enforcement organizations, kind of. But they're kind of between the cracks, and they can kind of do stuff that the law enforcement can't really do. And they have different, an intelligence agent has, this is the stereotypical ones there. Most of them are pretty astute womanizers, which I don't really delve into that kind of thing very much. They also take on other identities, which I don't do that. I'm pretty much content being myself, but I do have the alternate name that I use. It's not really an alternative persona. It's just my name, Jeff Wefferson, that I use for my radio show and most of my internet presence. And it comes from my friend Charlotte Smith back in the mountains in Tennessee back in the late 90s. She used to call me Weffer. She just came up with that somewhere from Jeff. She got Weffer. And so in 1996, when I created my first email account, I go like, well, look, I'm not going to put my real name on there. I'm going to fool Big Brother. And it was just for fun. So I came up with the name Jeff Wefferson, based on Charlotte's nickname of Weffer and Weffer's son, kind of like Thomas Jefferson. So it was meant to be a Dr. Seuss version of Thomas Jefferson, Jeff Wefferson. Meant to be funny. So anyway, some people know me as Jeff Wefferson. I don't have a numerical nomenclature like 007 or anything like that, but if I was going to have one, it would probably be 00 pi. 003.14159265. That could be my serial number. And I don't really go, I don't travel incognito, I don't go undercover, although I am easily mistaken for a hippie. And also, my legal classification in Australia and New Zealand is as a tourist. And so that's perfectly fine, even though I'm not a tourist. I'm a traveler. And in both Australia and New Zealand immigration, they make a distinction between tourist and traveler. Anyway, I'll have to do a show about that one time. But this show is actually taking kind of a break from the heavy, serious stuff that I tend to deal with because of the sense of urgency that I feel, the gravity of the situation in which humans find themselves on Mother Earth, and trying to address issues and bring up topics and information that an exploration of which and getting them onto people's mind might possibly help us to re-navigate our process, not to quote-unquote save ourselves or anybody else from whatever, but to lessen the severity of the purification that the Hopi prophecy tells us is inevitable, to cleanse the earth of all the out-of-balance damage that our species is doing. By lessening the severity, we lessen the severity of the impacts on all the non-human life forms that are already suffering because of us. So my main work as a freelance intelligence agent is to do exactly that. And by freelance, the freelance part means that I don't work for anybody. Like a freelance artist is self-employed, freelance intelligence agent, I don't work for MK5, I don't work for the CIA, I don't work for the NSA, I don't work for the CSIRO or ASIO, or I don't even work for the LSD or the MDA or the American Basketball Association. I don't work for any of those multiple letter acronym organizations. I work for Mother's Earth, Nature, and Ocean. And it's all completely what they call in legal terms pro bono. It's for free. And I wouldn't want to be paid. But if you want to think of it as payment, Mother's Earth, Nature, and Ocean take such beautiful care of me and bless me in so many ways that's sufficient payment. I mean, it's just, that's my raison d'etre, my reason for being here. And so there's some fictional characters that I've got a bit of inspiration from, like the character Ilya Kuryakin in Man from U.N.C.L.E., played by Scottish actor David McCallum. He was pretty much of a badass at figuring stuff out and finding the bad guys doing the weird stuff and bringing them to justice. And also the character John Drake, who was Danger Man. He was a true badass. He didn't even have time for womanizing. And then he went on to play number two in a series called The Prisoner, which was very interesting. Then a few months ago, I became a big fan of Roger Moore as the Saint. He might be my very favorite one of all, because he was just such a beautiful spirit. And it was really, really inspiring. And then I didn't really see, I guess I saw some of his James Bond movies, but to me, Sean Connery, who actually just passed away last week at the age of 90, he was the true James Bond. Plenty of time for womanizing. He had all the gadgets that Ian Fleming, the Q, came up with for him. But the ultimate sort of like sleuthing he wasn't really a spy. He was a private investigator, Sherlock Holmes. And mainly the of the 40 actors or more that have played him in radio and TV, Basil Rathbone is my favorite one. So I sort of mentioned a lot of these characters in an article, a post on a radio show from last, just about a year ago, broadcast number 299. Sherlock Holmes explores the climate change myth. And so I really try to invoke the spirit of all these characters as my muses when I'm trying to do my investigative research and stuff like that. So the concept of freelance intelligence began with me in around 1985 in Athens, Georgia, where I'd been living for a year, and I'm not sure exactly how it started. I remember I made these, for some reason I was inspired to put together a collection of articles on different kind of relevant topics that related, and I made a few sort of spiral-bound copies to give to some of my friends. A lot of environmental and ecological issues and stuff like that. It kind of related to my emerging concept of The Brink, which I recorded my first songs under that name that same year in Atlanta. My songs Threshold, Stroke Infotoxin, and Einstein's Brain. So anyway, I made friends with a guy named Will Jackson, who was the manager, the night manager at a Kinko's copy center. It's kind of like Office Works in America, Kinko's. Sounds like a clown. But anyway, I'd go in there late at night and run off multiple copies of these books, always maybe about an inch thick, all these copies of these articles, and I'd do a dozen copies. And Will, I gave one to Will, and he really liked what I was doing. And I gave him one, he looked at it, and he goes like, well, Jeff, you know what? I'll be happy to run off stuff like this for you for free, because I like what you're doing, and it's a good way of getting information out there. So this began a multi-year relationship between me and Will, and probably just about everybody else that worked at that copy center, especially if I'd go in there late at night. They'd run off as many copies of all these things as I wanted. So I was coming out with box loads of documents. And these I called my freelance intelligence reports. And I wish I still had copies of them. I gave copies to a couple of libraries, like the University of Georgia, the University of Boulder, Colorado, in Boulder. Sent them to people. Even my friend's professor at CU, who was affiliated with the CIA, I gave him a copy of the Master Mac Daddy ones I made. That was two volumes, each of which was about 3 inches thick of all these articles. And there was nothing like secret about it or anything. It was all articles from journals, but it was all compiled in such a way that it all kind of fit together, and the articles complemented each other and filled in a lot of details on certain, bringing certain things, certain issues to clarity. And let's see, around 1989, when I was living in Telluride, Colorado, I started writing my comedy science fiction novel called From Thaleon with Love. Thaleon being an imaginary planet in the Arcturian star system, named after Thalia, T-H-A-L-I-A, who in Greek mythology was the muse of comedy. So Thaleon is a whimsical planet where everything is fun. Even gravity is whimsical. And so that's my imaginary planet, From Thaleon with Love. And the main character that was kind of like, I'll say an alter ego for me, his name was J. Paul Serengeti, which is a takeoff on J. Paul Getty, who was some kind of really rich industrial magnate from California. And Serengeti, like the Serengeti plain in Africa, but also at the time I wrote this, I was wearing Serengeti sunglasses, because that was the in brand in the ski town there. So J. Paul Serengeti. It's a cross between J. Paul Getty and Serengeti sunglasses. So he was the main sort of intelligence agent in this novel. And he met, in the very first chapter, he met a cyber chick from the Arcturian star system called Jane Bott LaWig. So anyway, I wrote a third of this. It's got about 13 chapters. There's other characters named K. Rubric Schrödinger, J. Ray-Ban Melanogaster. Ray-Ban's another kind of sunglasses, and Melanogaster's the genus of the fruit fly. And Buffy Bott, and the Prime Minister of Infotoxin, Vladislav Skrulewski. He was the nemesis of J. Paul Serengeti, or vice versa. In his computer, PAL, P-A-L, the Purposive Algorithmic Liar. So that's probably one of the freakiest chapters in the whole novel. But I'll have to finish it one day. So anyway, this is just a bunch of background leading up to on my being a freelance intelligence agent today. So what do I do as a freelance intelligence agent in the world of today? I try to do as much investigative research as I can, continually educating myself about issues that are extremely important, that affect the health and well-being of life, especially in Mother Ocean, but everywhere. And these are all topics and issues that I talk about on the show all the time. In fact, that's really what On the Brink Radio has always been about. It's really been about the reportings of a freelance intelligence agent. And the fact that it's called On the Brink means that there is a sense of urgency, and that's kind of what inspired me to go to the level of activism that I've been at for the past decade, or more, past couple of decades, is that I do think that we're on the brink in many, many different ways. I'm trying to clarify that and understand what it is that's brought us to the brink, and how much of it has to do with our own doing as Homo sapiens, man the wise. But self-education and constant researching and learning and digging and trying to figure stuff out and becoming aware, bringing stuff onto my radar as an individual that wasn't on there before, and communicating with other people, networking with like-minded people. This is all, and spending a lot of time reading and researching articles and following up on this and that, and there's not enough hours in the day to do all this, but then trying to distill it down and make sense out of it all and fit it into where it matters. And then, since I started doing this radio show in 2012, to take 8 or 10 or 12 hours every week to create a meaningful radio broadcast and the accompanying email blog post that I send. And that's strictly as a labor of freelance intelligence work. But one of the most interesting things that I would say has come under my activities as a freelance intelligence agent has been some of the very interesting people who I've got to meet or communicate with in my life. And some of them are quite, like, I've met a lot of really sort of well-known, or if you want to use the word famous, musicians. And I'm not going to bring them into this right now, although I will mention the name of Ralph Towner, that's T-O-W-N-E-R, because I consider him to be probably the single best musician of humans on this whole planet. And I've met him a few times, and I invited him to participate in a project that I was working on back in the mid-90s that involved musical dialogues with whales and dolphins. And he was very excited about it. And a very, very cool person. And my favorite quote from him was that when I was talking to him about doing this project, his immediate response was, "Jeff, we should really leave those people alone," and referring to the whales and dolphins as people. So that really struck me as being a very significant perspective to have. And Dr. John Lilly, the well-known mind explorer and neurophysiologist and whale and dolphin communication guy, I met him and his wife. I did 2 week-long workshops with them at the Esalen Institute in the late 70s, 1978, 79, 80, and then was invited to go to their lab where the dolphins were a few times, where I actually got to swim with the dolphins, Joe and Rosie, in September of 1981, which was a very powerful experience. And then sat down and talked with John Lilly one-on-one for about an hour another time around that time. So I met them quite a few times, and that was very powerful. And then also at Esalen, I first met a science author named Fritjof Capra, who wrote a very revolutionary book called The Tao of Physics, and then The Turning Point. And we kept in touch for a few years. He was very interested in my work with the whales and dolphins. And then last year, I was inspired to get back in touch with him, which I did. And he remembered me. And so I did a really cool interview with him on my radio show. I think it was in August of last year. And that was really cool. And he reads a lot of my emails now. And in 1992, I got to meet astronomer Carl Sagan, the well-known educator, former planetary scientist at Cornell, producer and host of the Cosmos TV series. And he became a very outspoken anti-nuclear activist and also co-author of the reports on the effects of nuclear winter, and a very profoundly important figure in science awareness and education. And I got to meet him at a function, at a NASA function on Columbus Day, October 12th, 1992, at the Deep Space Network, the Goldstone Mojave Radio Telescope Installation, kind of near Barstow, California, out in 100 miles or so east of Los Angeles. And got to shake his hand and talk to him for 5 minutes. He was talking to some other people, and I didn't really want to interrupt him, but I was also with Dr. Fiorella Terenzi, this fairly beautiful, voluptuous Italian astrophysicist who had also recorded some music using sounds of colliding radio galaxies, which was quite cool. So she was there too, but she and I were both invited to this event, which was to celebrate the beginning of a new 10-year SETI, that's the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, the beginning of a new 10-year SETI program to do a high-resolution microwave survey of the heavens looking for these anomalous needle-in-the-haystack signals from extraterrestrial civilizations. And so I met her. She and I had lunch again a few weeks later. And then I went to a show she did in San Francisco, I think the next year or something like that. But she and I were invited there by people from the SETI group who I had got in touch with because I knew they were interested in the dolphin work. And I had gone down to the SETI office at the Ames Research Center in Mountain View, California, which is, it's an Air Force base too, and met astronomers Seth Shostak and Jill Charter, who are fairly big names in SETI. At this time, NASA was still hosting SETI. And I met a guy named Bob Arnold, who was the public relations director, and he was quite supportive of me. And they, Bob Arnold, when I told him about this project to do the musical dialogues with whales in the use of radio telescope, he said, well, look, you know who you need to talk to? Arthur C. Clarke. You need to talk to Arthur C. Clarke about all this. So he gave me his mailing address in Sri Lanka, and I wrote to him, sent him a t-shirt and a painted rock, got a letter back from him with his phone number. So I rang him up, and the little Indian guy that answered the phone, he goes, ah, Jeff Phillips, like he knew who I was. And so I talked with Arthur C. Clarke, and his very first words were, ah, Jeff, I'd really like to thank you for that beautiful parcel you sent with the rock and t-shirt and stuff. And by the way, how's Carl Sagan doing? Because Carl had this come down with this rare form of leukemia. And I didn't really know how he was doing, but he was still alive. This was 1996. Talked to Arthur C. Clarke for a couple of hours, and then again a few weeks later for another couple of hours. And I really wish I had recorded those conversations. So those are just some of the intellectual bigwigs that I've met or communicated with. And then related to the same big picture, about 4 years ago I was invited up to the Siding Spring Observatory in the Warrumbungles in New South Wales to visit some comet astronomers, a guy named Malcolm Hartley. And they put me on to this dude named Duncan Steele, the astronomer, I call him Franken Steele, who I interviewed in Nelson, New Zealand back in January, and he's the one who wants to infect Mars with genetically modified organisms. But he also made it possible for me to communicate with Victor Klub and Bill Napier, probably the two most influential comet and asteroid astronomers in the whole world, because of their amazing contributions to our understanding of heliocosmic dynamics and what they call episodic bombardment and the history of this a comet called Encke, E-N-C-K-E. This all relates with the history of life on Earth. And we've just come out of, in late October, early November, one of two Encke windows, periods of time in which the Earth is passing through the debris clouds of this, the break of this, of what used to be a supercomet. And it's the time of year when the Earth is most likely to have an impact encounter from a significant body that could cause a global catastrophic event. And as a freelance intelligence agent, I've also got to visit some really cool places like the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena, California. There I got to meet Sylvie Roof, who was one of the, she was the director of the Visual Graphics Laboratory. And I also got to meet Carl Malone, who was an engineer that had worked on the Voyager spacecraft. And he was a flute player. We had a really cool jam, and there was a 6.2 earthquake the next morning. And so that was really cool. Also have visited Los Alamos National Laboratory two or three times over the years because I knew people that were scientists there. It was a pretty creepy place. It's where they designed the atomic bomb. So this is just a few cool people I've met and places I've been that, you know, it's all in a day's work for the freelance intelligence agent. But ultimately what I'm about is more, that's all just kind of in jest. I'm more about the real-time being in touch with nature and being in touch with indigenous people of the land and of the sea and dialing into the cosmos and the forces of nature herself in order to use my sacred ultimate technology vehicle as kind of a biological radio telescope to dial in and listen and perceive all the important things that are happening in the ocean and on the earth and in the heliocosm with the planets and the stars and the supernovas and the sun and the comets and asteroids. And to hear with my heart and mind the voices of all of our families of life, many of whom are very much in distress, like all the pilot whales who stranded in Tasmania a few weeks ago, who I think were desperate to get away from whatever they thought was attacking or scaring them and to get into a place of safety up this river and even out of the water, get their ears out of the water so that they wouldn't be deafened, or get out of the water so that they wouldn't continue to be electrocuted. These are both very plausible scenarios for what caused that stranding. So this is the kind of stuff that I do. I spend a lot of time networking with people, but also communicating with the forces of nature and being in sort of listening, non-linguistic, silence is golden mode. And I guess you could say that my single greatest activity or work as a freelance intelligence agent also involves being what I call a human RNA messenger molecule. That's where the RNA messenger molecules transport, they convey information back and forth. And so I don't mind being associated with that. But there's kind of this big picture, complex constellation of ideas and concepts and processes. I call it the Cetacean, Keringi, Lawler, Lilly, Narby, Ricketts, Filikovsky, Klug, Napier, Alvarez, Asher, Ferrata, Harrington, Marsden hypothesis. And if you look at the work of all these people, all of whom I talk about on this show, that's kind of like the big picture that I'm kind of explicating now and actually trying to paint pictures, art, and create new forms of visual information display that convey this. Well, anyway, the sun's getting ready to go down, and that's probably enough on being a freelance intelligence agent, but in a way we all are. And it's all just for fun, I think, but everybody is really being called on now to do our best and to be on our highest path and to ask more of yourself. In the words of my favorite comedian, George Carlin, who also said, voting implies consent to be governed. So, anyway, this is Jeff Phillips Wieferson signing off here for On the Brink Radio. Many thanks to Jill Stanley at UCY-TV. Live simply so that others may simply live. And I'll talk with you again next week. Much love and many blessings. God has blessed America. Why don't they build another White House across the lawn so both of them can play? Good day. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh.